This is what they want to change.
He has to get out here for a conference.
Senate Agriculture and Investments Committee will come to order. First bill we'll be taking up today is Senate File 775, Mandeveras. He was here.
He is here.
Senator Mandeveer.
I think he didn't hear.
Senator Mandeveer, welcome to the committee, and let's get started.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 775 deals with the problem that for some reason, some assessors are determining that these horse boarding facilities are commercial, and my witness, Mr. Ramberg, can kind of elaborate on that just to tell you what the problem is briefly. That's right, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Ag Committee, my name is Dan Ramberg, R-A-M-B-E-R-G, Hugo, Minnesota. What has happened here over the last, several months, this last fall and so forth, members of the Washington County had sent representatives, not necessarily assessors, but representatives out and looked over facilities, not mine, but other facilities, and at that time informed them that they would be from here on considered on a commercial base. Well, a commercial base, just briefly, a commercial taxation would put a boarding facility, I know mine, out of business. That would be a sad state of affair for a lot of reasons, and I'll certainly go into it at a later date. But anyhow, that's what prompted the movement to make it to clarify that the commercial boarding of horses be agriculturally taxed on a agriculture back. It's already in the statute that we have 27.3.13, subdivision 23. It already states that boarding horses will be taxed on as a commercial entity. So when this new eruption came on, and like I said, and just in fall, I figured the way to take care of it is not wait for it to happen, but to meet it on our grounds. And so, therefore, we set up a bill, and that's what the 775 talks about. What we did is we took their language, the assessor's language, that they claim because you're training and teaching of riding, it no longer classifies as a boarding stable or agricultural activities. Rather more, it's a commercial enterprise because of the training and teaching of riding. Training and teaching of riding, and particularly training, has been forever. There isn't a horse born knowing how to carry a person on his back or turn or stop, make a sliding stop. It doesn't happen that way. It takes training. So what the assessors have done is taken the obvious and turned it into something that they've mixed up and thought they discovered a brew of some different nature. It's really too bad that we have to go through this. So part of this hearing, part of this bill, is to educate the assessors and so that they can understand what agricultural means. The other things that we have to do is, in order to do that, what we've done is we've added to the statute already existing the words training, instruction of riding. Hopefully this heads off or at least keeps the assessors at least an even keel or so that they don't go With me today, I have a incident in Sherburne County of a really gross assessor's action. I'm going to introduce Allison Eklund. She's an attorney that is kind of specializing in equine, and she can explain the incident in Sherburne County.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Allison Eklund. I'm an attorney from Roseville, Minnesota. I practice out of the Twin Cities. I represent equine business interests in Minnesota statewide. And I represent Dwayne and Brenda Summerdorf in a tax appeal of their property tax classification currently pending in Sherburne County in Minnesota Tax Court. And that case is scheduled for hearing on April 23rd of this year, 2009, for the tax assessment year of 2007. Mr. Ramberg's concern essentially is that what happened with the Summerdorf property is going to happen throughout Minnesota and will poison the roots of Minnesota's horse industry, which is founded on the ability of business people to have a horse property that they also live on and can take care of, and that they can have a home-based business boarding horses out of their equine facility on their real estate. The Senate Bill 775 seeks to amend 273, Section 13, Subdivision 23E3, which is the provision that Mr. Dan Ramberg managed to pass way back in 1990. He came down here to the Capitol. He was able to pass a law in response to his own tax appeal, Ramberg versus Washington County, in which he was not granted agricultural classification for his horse boarding operation. He got this particular provision passed so that horse boarding could be considered an agricultural pursuit. And I would insert here a reminder that essentially states the obvious, which is that all agricultural activity is commercial activity. Well, people don't grow corn to watch it grow. They grow corn to sell it. Similarly, horseback riding and horse activities have been traditionally forever, as Dan said, considered a farm activity, an agricultural activity. It is also a viable commercial activity, and it does form the roots of Minnesota's horse industry. People need to know where they can keep their horses, and not everyone like me living in the suburb of Roseville can keep my horse on my own property. So there have to be places where people can have these horse boarding stables, where the people who own those stables live on the property. It's agricultural homestead to have that kind of a property under existing law. Now, Mr. Ramberg's concern and what has happened with the Summerdorfs is that they have a property that otherwise does qualify for agricultural homestead. It's more than 10 acres. It's of an agricultural nature. It's rural in nature. And they had a commercial horse boarding stable built on that facility, on that property, that they also lived on. So it was a perfect setup for a viable agricultural operation on their homestead real estate. But what happened was that in order to bring in more horse boarders to their stable, they contracted with a horse trainer and riding instructor. Now, the contract that they entered into gave this particular individual, the horse trainer, a deal. He would be paying reduced board for the for his ability to bring in a greater number of boarders to the stable. So instead of paying $350 a month, for example, they might pay $325 a month because he was bringing in a greater volume of business, these additional horses who were coming to the stable not only for the Summerdorf's facility, but to have their horses professionally trained by this individual who could give riding instruction, horse training, all of the elements of a successful or even a basically viable horse boarding operation. And as Mr. Ramberg points out, you can't just store horses like motorcycles. They are not machines. They have to be handled. They have to be trained by professionals, and they have to be handled on a regular basis by people who know what they're doing, or the animals will not be safe to be around. These are not cats and dogs we're talking about. These are large and dangerous livestock, as recognized by Minnesota statutes, Section 604A, Section 12. This is a part of Minnesota public policy to recognize that horses are farm animals, they are livestock, they are dangerous, and they need to be handled. So what happened with the Summerdorfs was that their contract with this horse trainer and riding instructor raised the attention of the county assessor, who was of the opinion, backed up subsequently by the Minnesota Department of Revenue, that that presence of additional commercial activity converted the agricultural use of a commercial horse boarding operation to a commercial industrial use. And as we all know, that essentially triples the tax rate from 0.5% of market value to 1.5% of market value, which in many cases could put a stable out of business without further ado. The second problem with this particular situation was that the Summerdorfs were choosing to grow hay in their pasture on contiguous acreage as well as on the parcel in question. They have a total of 80 acres. One parcel is mostly timber, another parcel is mostly pasture, and the parcel in question is their homestead real estate that has the equestrian facility on it. That parcel also has seeded hay pasture with a management plan that is maintained specifically for the nutrition of horses. Now, there are two different things, as farmers know, that you can do with a hay pasture. You can let animals go out and eat the hay the way that nature intended them to, by grazing. That is the definition of forage in Merriam-Webster's dictionary. It's food for animals, especially when taken by browsing or grazing. And that is an agricultural product under 273.13.23.E.1.
Wow.
Unfortunately, the county assessor took the position that because this hay was not being cut down, baled, sold, and then bought back to feed to the horses, it was not a viable agricultural product. Now, that's just not what the statute says. We shouldn't be here talking about this because the statute should speak for itself. But we are here today asking for the statute to be amended for clarification because the Department of Revenue has repeatedly affirmed the county assessor's decision that despite the clear language of that statute, they claim that in order to get agricultural classification for a commercial horse boarding stable, which has its own standalone provision in the statute, that you must. You cannot graze your horses on that hay pasture. You have to cut it down, bale it, sell it, and buy it back before feeding it to the horses. And that violates common sense. But it is what it is. Department of Revenue continues to maintain that position, and that is why the statute is proposed for amendment as suggested in the bill. I'd like to point out here that the bill is not intended to change existing law. It is intended to clarify existing law. Not everybody understands what it takes to raise, to feed, and to manage and to ride horses safely and effectively and efficiently and to run a business. So the county assessors could be excused in some sense for not understanding some of these things. But on the other hand, it falls upon the equine industry in Minnesota to raise attention to the fact that many of the interpretations of this assessor are contrary to common sense and self-defeating to the industry itself and to the property owners. So it is not designed to change anything. It is designed to eliminate the requirement that hay be grown in addition to having commercial horse boarding, but only because, as every horse owner knows, if you're going to have the 10 acres or more required for agricultural classification, the horses are going to graze the land. Horses do that. They eat hay. They graze, they take their nutrition by grazing, and so on any otherwise viable agricultural property, these horses are going to eat the grass, and they're going to get their nutrition, at least in part, in that manner. So it doesn't change anything. you still have properties contiguous acreage of at least 10 acres, agricultural, rural in nature. The horses are going to be grazing the land, and that's why this particular amendment should not change that characteristic in agricultural classification. The statute amendment also adds a provision stating that horse trainers and other equestrian activities for hire may be conducted on the property. And again, that is because those activities are an integral, essential element, not only of a successful horse boarding business, but of a safe horse boarding business, because horses, as Minnesota law recognizes, will kick and bite and spook and do all kinds of things that large livestock will do, and they require professional training in order to keep them properly housed, fed, and managed. And that is the reason for this bill and why we hope that the committee will support it. Thank you.
Any discussion from the committee members? Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair and Senator Vanderveer, and I apologize for not catching your last name. And committee members, what I would recommend we do here is send this over to the tax committee. And Senator Vanderveer, what I'd like to do while this is traveling over that direction, I'd like to you and me to sit down with the department, and we will try to explain to them that pasture is agriculture production. If we're not very successful there, then we'll try to take this a little farther in the ag committee, but or in the tax committee. But, you know, I'm having a hard time understanding that the department doesn't get that if you're growing grass in a pasture for feeding to horses, that that's ag production. But I'd like for you and me to sit down and have a little meeting with the department and see if we can get this clarified without changing the law. Yeah, if we can't, you know, move this, I'd recommend the committee move this to the tax committee, and that'll give us a week or so to take a little look at it, and we'll see what we can do. But I think you have a legitimate concern, and I'd like to meet with the department and see what their problem is, because from my perspective, your arguments are accurate.
Thank you, Senator.
And Mr. Chair, you know, I chair the Property Tax Division, so I think we'll have a pretty good hearing with the department.
Senator Phoebe.
Mr. Chair and members, thanks for your testimony today. And I agree and would support what Senator Scoy is planning, and I would like to move the bill.
Okay. Then the bill will move, if it moves out of here, moves to the Tax Committee for further consideration. Everybody understand the motion? Senator Phoebe moves that Senate File 775 recommend to pass and refer to the Tax Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair and members, at this time I'd like to offer to the committee that we would take Senate File 691 from the table. We had this bill in committee the other day, and I think that the committee had some concerns about the way the bill as it was drafted. And I've been working with Senator Erickson Ropes and other members, talking with the railroad personnel, the department, Mr. Knopf, and I think I've come up with some compromise language that I would like to offer up to the committee. In order to do that, we need to take this bill from the table. So I would propose at this time to move to take Senate File 691 from the table.
Senator Scoy moves that we take 691 from the table. Any discussion? Not all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
So adopted. No. 691, we're ready to go. Senator Ropes.
Mr. Chair, could we pass out the A5 amendment, please?
Yeah.
Senator Scully.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I'm going to move the A5 amendment. And this is an amendment that deletes the language that was amended into 691 in committee a week or so ago. I think there was a number of problems with the original language, particularly the 48-hour notice provision that was problematic and not workable. But I also think that there is an issue that we need to be concerned about with regard to a pesticide application, and that is that people that are applying pesticides in the state of Minnesota are well-trained, have accurate information, and are following the label. And if you will track down on the A5 amendment, subdivision 2 is that we should have the railroad companies, providing good information to all of their employees, give them outreach opportunities. The B subsection there is that they would provide annual safety training to any employee who would be applying pesticides. I think that's pretty common sense. Subdivision 3, restricting where pesticides could be sprayed. We heard in the testimony that locomotives and all kinds of stuff that were being having pesticide applied to them that really aren't the target. I mean, we're required as farmers when we're using pesticides to have a target and to hit that target, to not have our chemicals drifting around or going anywhere outside of the target. So I think we should kind of clarify a little bit there what the target is. It's supposed to be a plant if it's a herbicide, certainly not a locomotive. The B section in subdivision 3, I mean, that's really common sense and certainly part of the label that if they are using a pesticide that has restricted access, people are not supposed to be in that area within the time frame of the restricted access. And then subdivision 4 is a misuse of reporting. That also should be required under the label that if there is an incident or a misuse, that it be reported to the Department of Agriculture within 4 hours or as soon as practicable. I think this is a little common sense amendment to tell the folks, the railroads particular, or the railroads that we expect them to comply with the label on the chemical that they are using and to follow forward with that. And I would ask your consideration to support the A5 amendment.
Senator Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to thank Senator Scoy and Mr. Knopf for helping us come up with some language here that I think is a good compromise. I support the A5 amendment 100%. We've talked with the railroad folks here, and I haven't had a chance to talk with Mr. Apitz. I hope he's going to support it as well. He's nodding yes. We did take out the pieces that I came to learn from Senator Scoy actually just recently were more related to employer-employee issues and not under the purview of ag. So we may be pursuing some other legislation in future years in a different direction. So I think what we have here is confined to the jurisdiction of the Ag Department, and I'm very happy with it. One thing I would like to mention, that when it talks on line 1.6 and 1.9 about safety training opportunities, we're hoping that the common carrier railroads will provide their employees with some good safety training that meets some standards, and we don't know what sorts of standards yet to be suggesting. But we would like it to be more than just a piece of paper passed out to the employees, say, read this, and that, categorizes as safety training. So we might want to have a continued conversation, another point about what sort of standards we're going to meet for that safety training. But other than that, very happy with the language. And we do have Mr. Quayle here and Mr. Brown here from the railroad.
Let's hear from the railroads on that end of the table while you're thinking about it. Senator Engelbrecht, you had a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Subdivision 3 of the A5, Senator Scoia, I'm just wondering, I mean, there's going to have to be some room for some overspray here. I mean, if you're going to have a little bit of a breeze here, you're going to have some of the spray going onto the track, are you not, or on some of the equipment? Or are you just not going to be seeing any of that? Or?
Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, you know, I should have brought a chemical label along with me so I could have read to you how it reads, but we're restricted from drift. I mean, you have to have a target, okay. And you got to be hitting the target. And farmers deal with wind all the time when we're trying to spray our fields. If the wind comes up, we quit. That's just what happens. And I mean, to actually be spraying on metal, you know, I mean, even if it's around the field, I don't know what people with obstacles in their field do, but, you know, we've got some power lines and stuff. We avoid them.
Right.
And I just think the railroad ought to be doing that. I'm pretty sure that if you read the label, it's required that you put the chemical on the target you're hitting, and if it's a herbicide, it would be a plant.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Just to follow up, and I agree with that. I think that's certainly reasonable. I'm just saying when the vehicle, as was displayed on the example here the last time we heard the bill, is going down the track at a certain speed, you're going to have a little bit of a, you know, maybe it's nothing to worry about. You are applying it onto the plant. I'm just saying there might be some drawback there back into the track possibly, but it's not intentional, I don't think so.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I see this amendment came out at 8:50 a.m. this morning, and Senator Scoia said that he'd been working with some members of the committee. I'm the lead Republican on this committee, and I don't think he talked to me about this amendment, and I just saw it here a few minutes ago. And I think it would have been nice if we could have seen this ahead of time. Now, there's, you know, this is better than it has been. I guess these railroad guys are going to say they can live with it and so forth. But I'm also going to zero in on Subdivision 3, which Senator Engelbrecht zeroed in on pesticide applications. A person may not directly apply restricted-use pesticide to occupied or unoccupied locomotives, track repair equipment, or on-track housing units. Well, that sounds pretty reasonable. But wouldn't that be covered under the next two sentences? Employees of a common carrier railroad must not be required to work in affected areas in a manner that is inconsistent with a pesticide label. I guess it doesn't cover that. But it seems to me the simplest thing to do, as long as we think we've got to do something at all, is just say we're going to follow the label. The label is the law. And I can see that in some cases you might be using some track equipment to just move down the track and spot spray or spray as you go. I mean, you're bound to get a little bit of product on something besides the weed.
Mr. Scoia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dill, you know, I agree with you that if this was a normal circumstance, people would just be following the label. I listened to the testimony from the railroads of a week ago, and I cringed, to be honest with you, about some of the testimony I heard and watched. And I think maybe this is just it's not a shot across the locomotive, but maybe a paper airplane that we're throwing at the train as it goes by to try to get their attention that they need to follow the law. I don't think we have anything that's unreasonable. There's nothing in here inconsistent with label requirements. But when I heard that they provided workers dry coveralls because their coveralls were getting wet from, I was astounded. When I heard them talking about spraying locomotives, they had a worker in Wilmer that had been sprayed, wasn't reported. I think we need to kind of, I mean, just prick them just a little bit so that they know we're paying attention.
Let's hear from the railroad industry. Do you Welcome to committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senators. My name is Philip Qualley with the United Transportation Union Minnesota Legislative Board, representing 1,200 railroad workers in the state of Minnesota. And if I may, I'll proceed with just a few brief comments. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Scoy and Senators, for taking this bill off the table. In your packet, you have seen the affidavit of UTU member Mr. Stephen Lee Olson, who was sprayed in Wilmer Yard directly last year. I would like to also comment that the UTU has made a compromise as well in contributing to this language. And UTU has asked in the last hearing, after seeing the movie that you did see, the terms of which we certainly agree with in from that movie, that we've asked the rhetorical question is, how do you comply with that movie that the carriers showed you if we don't know the sprayers are going through in advance? We retire that question today in support of this legislation. We think the issue will continue. The UTU supports this amendment and this compromise, and we thank you very much for hearing from the railroad workers in Minnesota. Thank you.
Sir?
Mr. Chairman, my name is David Brown. I'm with the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen. I'm the state chairman for the legislative board. I concur with this new amendment. I have I too have issues about the movie that was brought before us at the last hearing concerning the warning and notifications. So prior to hear some of these issues that are on the label, and I especially am supportive of subsection 3 of spraying, the direct spraying of locomotives unoccupied or occupied. And I support this, the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen support this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Do you want to help us, Senate Counsel? Does he want to change something? Or?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senate Counsel just brought to my attention that this is consistent with current law in that you have to be spraying within the target site also. So, I mean, this is just consistent with what current law is, what the label requirements are. You know, if you're going to be using pesticides, you have to get your little applicator's license. You know, I mean, it's all pretty common sense. I just think we'll, you know, kind of tell people we're looking at it.
Let's vote on number 5, and then we can amend it if you want to.
Mr. Chair, what I'd like to say to the committee is we move to vote on A5. I've been in discussion with the department, and they've looked at this as something similar to this in the House. They think because of the reporting requirement that there's a fiscal note. So the path that this, if this amendment is adopted onto Senate File 691, would travel, we would move it to finance, and the department will take a look at some of the fiscal ramifications, and it'll come back to us in the budget division. And what I would think that, you know, I would be asking the chair to do in discussions with Senator Erickson Ropes, because it is her bill, that this would be on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus budget bill. That would be my thought for how this bill would be proceeding. So, you know, the direction we're going with this is if we are to move 691 along.
Senator Ropes, you have a question?
Mr. Chair, and Senator Scoy, thank you for that. I do have a question about if basically the point of this amendment is just stressing what already is law. And so I wonder if there is a financial impact, because they're supposed to report now, Ms. Hughes. So actually what we're doing is just literally underlining current law. Is that correct? So here, I don't know that there would be an additional fiscal impact if we're not requiring anything additional.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Erickson Ropes, I have been talking to the department about it. They're uncertain. In the House bill that is got, well, this is started from with that, so that misuse reporting is very comparable. They did have a fiscal note on it. And so I think the committee ought to know that that's probably going to be there, and it looks to me like that's the path that this is going to end up taking.
Senator Kubik, do you have a question? You had to slip out, I know.
Pardon?
Did you have a question? I know you had to leave for a bill.
That was on a prior bill, Mr. Chair. Wasn't on this one.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any more discussion on the AA5 amendment? Senator Engelbretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Skoy, if everything is in order at the federal level for the Right to Know Act, and the railroad company is required to do that, and I believe Senator Erickson Ropes is saying we're sending a strong reminder to these folks. Do we need new legislation to do that, or maybe a strong resolution or something on that order?
Senator Skoy.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Engelbretson, no. They should be doing this.
Right.
This is all stuff that should be done. To have somebody come before the Ag Committee and talk about such apparent unknowingness of what the label law is when they're using pesticides brought a level of concern to me that, as I thought about, I thought maybe we should make them know that we're paying a little attention to it. Because, to be honest, we have enough trouble as farmers with people coming at us for misapplying our farm chemicals. And I don't want another industry in the state out there misapplying, because it's hard enough as it is to do this business. And I think the ag community should be supportive of people's ability to use pesticides, but they should be using them within the label. And I support that. When I hear testimony that appears like it's not within the label, then I think I'll pay a little particular attention to it.
Senator Coring.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just want to just say that I certainly understand what Senator Skoy is saying. I guess what worries me is if we have, if trains were just strictly in Minnesota, no problem, but trains are in 50 different states, and I'm just wondering if I hope we're not, every state isn't setting up a different set of rules. I think it should be one set of rules for the whole United States, and I guess I think we should be talking to Congressman Oberstar, and being that he's the chair of the Transportation Committee, and see what he has to say about this. And it goes back to what I've said before consistently. I don't know. I almost think we got enough laws, and I think if some people would just apply common sense, I think that about half of us would probably be out of a job here. So anyway, that's my I paid my $100 so I can say my piece and I feel better.
You got paid today. Senator Dale.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I don't know if there's a restricted use pesticides that are supposed to be applied to locomotives, track repair equipment, or on-track housing units, but maybe there could be if you needed some kind of strong detergent to clean the grease and so forth off a locomotive, or if you wanted to hire somebody to come in and fumigate the housing units because there are bed bugs in there or rats or something. And so if we just said follow the label, which is what the law is anyway, but here we're adding an additional requirement that if there is a restricted use pesticide that is used on a locomotive for cleaning purposes or I can imagine there could be restricted use pesticides used in housing units for different reasons. So that is a requirement that is above and beyond what the label would say. I would think I think we just should say something about following the label and not get into some extra details there. And the other thing I'm wondering about is on line 1.17, it says you're supposed to report within 4 hours or as soon as practical any pesticide misuse. And I'm not sure that every pesticide misuse is deserving of reporting. Maybe it is, but what I would think you'd want to do is look at the label and see what it says and what you're supposed to do there. Now, at one point in time, there was a law that said that if you spilled anything above the, if you spilled a pesticide, any amount above whatever the application rate is, that was considered a reportable spill. So if you're at the end of the field with a sprayer and you don't get it turned off and you double spray the end or something happens or you're overlapping or something, the way the law actually read it, that was a reportable spill. And the same thing with gasoline. When you're filling up your gas tank, and the law was if you spilled anything above zero on a fossil fuel, that was a reportable spill. Well, I got that changed 15 years ago or so, so now you've got to spill at least 5 gallons of fossil fuel before it becomes reportable. And I think the federal law is 25 gallons, unless it goes right into the surface water or down a well or something like that, then any amount above zero is reportable. But I'm just kind of wondering about any pesticide misuse here. If at least for a herbicide, now I also got that changed, so you got to spill as much as you put on 1 acre in one spot before you got to report it. I think that might be a little bit strong.
It's defined. Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, you'll see below there's a definition of misuse. And it says, for the purpose of this section, misuse means a pesticide application that violates subdivision 3, so any of those violations, plus any provision of 18B.07, and those are the general prohibited pesticide use. So it's not any violation of the pesticide. It's basically that's inconsistent with the label that endangers humans, damages agricultural products, food, livestock, fish, or wildlife, that will cause an unreasonable adverse effects on the environment. And so on. I mean, there's a whole number of things, but I don't think it's any. I mean, if you violate the label, yeah, that would be any violation. But it's not. Probably it might not be quite as broad because of that definition as you may have been thinking.
Okay. So does the word "any" have to be in there? I don't know that we need multiple. Pesticide misuse as defined by.
Well, Mr. Chairman, below it does define misuse.
So anything that's on that list. Yeah. Okay. And then what about the use of restricted use pesticides? I don't know for sure. Maybe there aren't any, but if I would think there could be.
Well,
in terms of where it's going to go.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dill, to that point, I wrote a few notes here. What if we added the words "unless labeled for that use" at the end of that?
Okay, no, at the end of 1.12.
Yeah.
Okay. And Mr. Knopf, are we going
to? Oh, Chairman? Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, I was going to ask if you wanted to add something on that. And I think it probably, when you say labeled for that use, I think you should say specifically labeled for that use. So, Mr. Chairman, it would be in line 1.12. Before the period, insert comma, unless the pesticide is specifically labeled for that use.
Can I incorporate that, Mr. Chair?
Yes, you can.
I'll incorporate that amendment in my amendment.
So we're working on the A5.
Wasn't A5 adopted?
Amendment.
A5 hasn't been
adopted. Yes, sir. Senator Robes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the continued work on the language here. Again, members, I would say we heard some pretty egregious testimony that this is something that needs to be addressed. This bill is a very simple bill. It just basically restates our expectation according to the manufacturer's label instructions. It's not very complicated. I think it's real important for us to just move the bill, move the amendment, and do the right thing.
Mr. Chair, I'll renew my motion on the A5 amendment.
Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion to have the A5 amendment adopted.
As amended.
Everybody understand that? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
It's adopted. Now, members, we need to to, if there's no more, we need to know where it needs to go. I tell you what we can do, Senator Ropes, we can send it to finance, and if they don't want it to go to finance, it'll go someplace else. I need a motion from somebody to that.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 691 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to finance.
Okay. Everybody understand it? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next bill up will be Star Farms. Senator Chaudhry is tied up in the committee, so Senator Phoebe's going to start the bill and move it along. Senator Phoebe?
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here today on behalf of Senate File Number 1694. I'm a co-author on this bill. Senator Chaudhry is at another committee meeting. So with that, I would just welcome Mr. Ludeman, and he is going to walk us through and explain the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Pat Ludeman, Todd County. President of Minnesota Milk Producers. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm here today to support Senator Chaudhry's Senate File 1694, also known as the Star Farms Bill. At Minnesota Milk, we and our producers believe that this is the right approach and concept. We need to launch this bill forward. It's a concept at this point, but we think it needs to be fleshed out and moved ahead. This is the Star Farms bill, and the concept is a bottom-up, not a top-down way of looking at our farms and regulating our farms. When we do this, we're voluntarily working with the community, those of us on our farms. We're voluntarily reaching the goal of clean water, clean air, and clean soil, and we're excited about this concept. Some of you know that at Minnesota Milk Producers, we have what's called a five-star dairy program, and it's also known as a livestock environmental quality assurance program. On a statewide basis, you would call this a pilot project, because at this point, we've just had 60 dairies go through the program, and we have more that are in process of going through it. The LEQA program, I should tell you at this point, we've had some other sources of funding, and at this point, there is another bill going through the legislature to help support that while the Star Farm concept is going forward. And so we hope that we have some funding through other avenues here while we're moving forward with Senator Chaudhry's bill. Our LEQA program and our five-star dairies, it's a formalized process that looks at every aspect of compliance with state laws and with nature and with our communities. We're very proud of our five-star dairies. It's got dozens of checkpoints, and it's not just about manure storage and nutrient management. It covers all kinds of compliance issues, and it's on a whole farm basis. It covers a number of things, including facilities, soils, crops, livestock, neighborhood relations, community image. So it fulfills all of the requirements so that we truly are five-star dairies when we're through with this process. When we do our LEQA program, we have what are called farm-specific prescriptions. And we have trained technicians, a lot of them are soil and water people, that go to each farm, and they check out the farms, and they look at the areas that we need to improve, and coming up with a prescription that we need to go through the steps and go through all the hoops so that we truly are in compliance with the law and with the environmental needs of today. As I said before, we've had 60 dairies that have completed the five-star program. We've got more in action. This is still in an infancy stage, and we've only got one facilitator for the program and several part-time technicians. But we believe that this is a step, you know, as we go forward to the Star Farms, we can take this to the next level. I want to tell you how the Star Farm process was developed, and now that we've got Senator Chaudhry here, we can talk about it. We met with the senator earlier this winter because of his position on the Senate Environment Committee, and those of us agricultural people thought we should get to know the senator. And we walked into his office and realized that, as most of you know, that he's a sportsman, that he's concerned about the environment and wants clean water and air and soil just like all of the rest of us do. And so we found in our conversation that day an unlikely alliance between an urban legislator and ourselves. And in the dialogue that we had that day, it was quite interesting. We told him about our Star Farms, or our five-star dairies, and in the dialogue, Senator Chaudhry challenged us, so to speak, you know, why don't we make this bigger than what it is? And out of that discussion and that challenge, we came forward, Senator Chaudhry came up with the Star Farm concept. Just like we have star cities and star lakes, why can't we have star farms across Minnesota that meet the requirements and exceed the requirements and that we can be proud of in our communities? So we agreed to work together and take this Star Farm approach to the next level, which is what we have here today. And I want to say that if we take this to the next level, it can move beyond being a pilot project. We can take it to a larger percentage of the farms across Minnesota in a positive, proactive manner that's voluntary. And as I said before, it can be a bottom-up, not a top-down approach. And hopefully, as we do this, we can build consensus, coordination, and agreement between our farmers, the Department of Ag, Pollution Control, Bowser, Soil and Water, and our community. And we believe that working together, we can build a better environment in an efficient and more cost-effective manner than any other way that we may have available to us. So we urge you to support the Star Farms bill. And at this point, I'd be willing to take any questions. Maybe the Senator Chaudhry would like to have some comments as well.
Any questions from
Mr.
the
Chair,
committee?
With that, I'm going to switch places here with Senator Chaudhry.
Doing your job.
Senator Laurie?
I didn't know if Senator Chaudhry had opening comments or if he's ready for questions.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think Senator Phoebe and witness handled it very, very well. The idea is to create an environmental initiative that is by farmers for farmers. I did not draft the language of this bill. They took it upon themselves. And in good faith, that way they would craft an idea that would work for them and by them. The only urging from me was that we could make the LEQA program, which is in its infancy, into something bigger and more recognizable, following the same initiatives that LEQA is doing, but expanding to something bigger and better. And so the only other thing I would say, Mr. Chair, is that I think this fits with the mission of the Clean Water Fund, and that I think what we can do, similarly to what we've done in the past with the Star Lakes program, is, and it's certainly up to the committee, but it seems like we could take a look at these issues, but create a, instead of passing this bill, establish a a good working group framework
to develop this concept even further over the interim, involving more stakeholders, getting more ideas, and come back next session with a really, really quality product. But that's certainly up to the committee. Seems like that might be a good idea, especially in discussions with the milk producers. But it is up to you.
Any questions from the members?
Mr. Chair, we would only seek the committee's stamp of approval that this is the type of idea we should endorse and develop over the interim for next session.
Senator Engelbretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question on appropriation. Do we have any idea how much that would be, roughly, comparison to other boards like this? I don't know.
Mr. Chair and Senator Engelbretson, for the working group, you mean?
Yes.
I think the Star Lakes program, Mr. Chair, Senator Britson, had $50,000-$100,000. Something to help work with to keep the staff going and keep the process moving. I would also propose to the committee that it consider bumping up the current funding for LEQA out of the Clean Water Fund a little bit so that they can continue their efforts, and then morph that into this Star Farms program next year. So I would certainly advocate for keeping LEQA going, maybe even a little bit more, until we come up with a real good plan for this.
Senator Engelbretson.
Thank you. Follow up on that. I agree. I think this is great. I happened to tour the farm community in Todd County just recently on a couple projects that the farmers had done there, working towards clean water, and it's, I guess I had no clue that they were doing that and what they were going through. So they're doing an awful lot, and obviously they're stewards of the land. And this is a great idea. Thanks.
Senator Dale.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I think it's a great idea too. I do have one question, since I understand Mr. Luneman, his organization put this together. On page 3, under conflict of interest, line 3.21. What would be an example of a conflict of interest where this board would be making a decision that where there'd be a problem?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dilf, I might answer that question for him. This language is kind of boilerplate language that is often included in these boards and organizations of this type.
Mm-hmm.
For purposes of this session, in creating a working group, we wouldn't need this language. But if we were to create a formal organization that's publicly funded, we often include this type of conflict of interest language. What have we imagined that might be? I'm not sure. Usually it's someone on the board benefiting from the board's decisions directly. Not that we have any examples that would happen, but it's just boilerplate language that we use put in these types of public organizations.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Chaudhary, was this language put in by the dairy farmers, or was that added by staff?
Mr. Chair, maybe Mr. Knopf can shed some light.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, the conflict of interest language?
Yeah.
That's boilerplate language. We have it for AURI. We have it. You have to understand that this is being set up as a 501c3 nonprofit, and the language is modeled after Senator Mary Olson's Star Lakes program from last year. And so it is the boilerplate conflict of interest, the same language that exists right now for the Star Lake Board.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Dill, if there's questions, we don't intend to pass this conflict of interest language this session. So if there's questions or concerns about it, what exactly is in there, we can talk about it.
Senator Ropes.
Mr. Chair and Senator Chaudhary, Senator Dill, it's limited to financial gain in terms of conflict of interest. So it doesn't have anything to do with, you could be a farmer, so you're going to vote this way on farming issues related to any of the topics. It's anyone just benefiting because of financial interest is the only basis for the conflict of interest clause.
Senator Gimsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Chaudhary. I think this is a good bill, too, and a great program, very innovative. Just curious about the plan itself and who is
going to be expected to pay for some of this testing, some of the management requirements and things like that that are going to go in there to set up the basis for it. Is that going to be the person applying, the farm applying for the program, or will that come from that Clean Water Fund money?
Mr. Chair and Senator Gimsey, we don't know. And that's a fair question to ask about this type of program. And so that's why we developed this. But in the end, we would ask that the committee lay this over for inclusion in its finance bill. I believe the committee is going to have an allocation of clean water money to consider it as a part of that, to a small portion to develop this program over the interim. And that those types of questions would be answered, given the stakeholders.
Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We started touching on it a little bit. My question is maybe more for council. I was wondering, are we able to set up a private nonprofit, a 501c3, legislatively like this, and say who the memberships are and things like that? I hadn't seen that done before.
Mr. Chairman, yes, the Star Lakes Board was established last year. The AORI is established as a 501c3 in statute. I think there are a few other examples outside of my area.
Okay. That's new to me.
Any other questions? Anything? Senator Chaudhry, there's two options I want you to look at. We could look at. The first one would be we could vote and pass it to state and local because of the board, or we can lay over the bill and does it require a motion for that if you want to lay it over and do a little more work on it. So it's you have one or you have those two options.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, if the committee would be interested in including this in its finance recommendations out of the Clean Water Fund, what I can do is, I'd love to have at least a kind of a tentative vote of endorsement of that. And then what I will do is craft a working group that is funded in small part out of the Clean Water Fund and craft it in a way so it doesn't have to go to state and local.
So then, Senator Chaudhry, if we just kind of lay the bill over and don't need a motion for that, we can lay it over. Okay. You can do a little more work on it.
Okay.
Between now and maybe even next year.
Yeah. We really want to just present this idea, see how members felt about endorsing the concept, and then establish a process for coming back next year with a really, really good product with all of Minnesota's interested parties involved. I'm excited. It's a chance for me to get to know Minnesota's farming community a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Any other discussion? Mr. Chaudhry, do you want to just lay your bill over?
No, Mr. Chair, we'll lay it over if we don't need a motion.
We don't need a motion for that. You can just make the recommendation.
Are there any other final thoughts, concerns that people think I should work on?
Okay.
Does anyone have any other final suggestions that we should consider? Are we on the right track?
Well, Ms. Chair and Senator Chaudhry, I'm not sure how you're going to avoid going to state and local government if you leave the piece in there about the board.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kubley, we would not have that piece in there.
Oh, okay.
We would just want to create a working group so that it would not need that other committee's approval.
Okay. But you'd be naming members to the group and giving it money and...
I don't know, maybe Mr. Knopf has a thought.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't hear the question. I'm sorry.
Even if we scale this back, Mr. Knopf, to a working group, give it some money out of the Clean Water Fund, would the state and local government committee still want to look at it?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhry, yes. I think your other provision, though, you do have some language on that in your clean water bill that includes, and if I wrote the language a few weeks ago. If I remember the language correctly, it doesn't actually set up a working group. It tells the commissioner to consult with a number of people, which should be able to keep it out of state and local government.
Okay, that's the language that I'll
okay.
Bring forward.
If the commissioner is responsible for sending things on and is instructed to consult with groups, that does typically avoid the state and local.
Yes.
Yep.
Senator Chaudhry,
okay,
I just come up with option number three.
Okay.
We could lay it over for possible inclusion in an ominous bill that I'm going to put together, if that's what you, if that would give you some comfort.
That'd be wonderful, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Does everybody understand the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Adopted. Members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I don't have anything more for today anyway, so we are adjourned.